he wrote it, or what was happening in his life when he wrote it. And it brings us back to 1 Samuel 22 through 24. So I'm just going to give us a quick recap of what was going on in David's life when he wrote this psalm before we read the psalm itself. Does that sound good? Great. So in 1 Samuel 22 through 24, or even in a little bit of a broader context, King Saul is the first king of Israel. Okay, and so Israel went for a long time without a king. They asked for a king, and God anointed Saul to become the king over Israel. Now, as he was king, God also decided that he was going to have a different person take over when Saul was done. And so he had Samuel, the person who this book is named after, come and anoint David, who was off in the fields. His father didn't even think about him. He was kind of the lowly child. Had Samuel come and anoint him and say, "You will be the next king of Israel. You will be the next king of Israel." Now, this is radical at this time, because the thing that happens is the king's son is the one who takes over, not some other person. And so, but this is what had happened, right? The prophet came, he anointed David, and he said, "David, you will be the next king of Israel." And so that'd be really exciting, right? You're in the shepherd's fields. Your dad doesn't even really think about you very much. Your family is you're kind of the lowly person in your family. And now all of a sudden you're elevated. "I'm going to be the next king of Israel. Wow. God has chosen me to do this." And it would sound pretty positive. And so then he gets to move into the palace with Saul and his family. He actually takes Saul's daughter as his wife. He becomes best friends with Saul's son. And everything looks great. He plays the harp for Saul to calm him down. And things are looking really, really good. And not only that, but David knows that God has promised him that he will be the next king of Israel. And to me, it reminds me of times when I think, I'm a follower of Jesus, and everything's on the up and up from here, right? And that's where David was at. He was in that place. Well, what happens is this ridiculous thing happens, and Saul gets it in his head that David is going to kill everyone in his family once he passes away. And he gets really, really worked up over it, and he just keeps thinking about it and keeps thinking about it, to the point where he says, "David, I need to kill David." And he starts to attack David. And so David runs for his life. David runs for his life, and he flees into the wilderness, and he finds a stronghold. He finds some help, and everyone from the nation of Israel who is basically down on their luck or in debt or having problems comes to David, and they form this militia around him to protect him. And David is running from Saul in chapters 22 through 24, and to the point where they're literally on the opposite side of the mountain of Saul and his army. Saul's got the army of Israel, and on the other side of the mountain, David's there with his militia, and they're running. It's kind of like when you're a kid and someone's playing tag, and you go like this, and they kind of just barely miss you. That's like the equivalent of this amount of people kind of being on just the other side of the mountain. So he's running for his life. And to get away, they dip into a cave. And they're hiding in the cave, and that happens to be the exact cave that Saul decides that he's going to use the restroom. Which, I mean, if you're looking to kill your enemy, that's kind of like a dream scenario, right? It's a dream scenario. So he's got his entire militia in there. Saul comes in by himself to relieve himself, to go to the bathroom. And everyone in David's militia is like, "Kill him. We want to go home. This is terrible. You'll get to be king. We won't have to sleep outside anymore. This will be way better. Kill him." But David says, "No, I can't do it." He was also anointed king of Israel. God has his hand on Saul as well. And so he sneaks over to him while he's doing his business, and he cuts off the corner of his robe. He cuts off the corner of his robe to prove that how close he could get. And he waits. And when Saul's done, he walks out of the cave. And when he gets a good distance off, David comes out. And he yells to Saul, and he shows the robe. And he says, "I'm not against you, Saul. Even though it feels that way, even though you think that's true, I'm not against you. And I never will be, because you're the Lord's anointed just as much as I am. Why would I kill your family? I'm married to your family. Your family is my best friend. This doesn't make sense. Please. This is a ridiculous situation. Please." And Saul repents in this moment. And he says, "Wow, you, David, you have treated me rightly and I have treated you wrongly. And the Lord will bless you because of what you've done." But it's not over, right? This is kind of like midway through the story. Saul goes home. David goes back into kind of a hiding type situation. And he continues to pursue him later, though. It's not like the whole difficulty of this season of David's life is over. And right where we think, or where we know this psalm to have been written, is right after this experience in the cave, where there's kind of like a little bit of relief, but it's this really difficult season. And David is crying out to God in song and prayer, and that's where we come to Psalm 57. So I'm going to be reading it out of the the English Standard Version. I'm not sure what you use, but good version. So let's do it. Psalm 57. "Be merciful to me, O God. Be merciful to me. For in you my soul takes refuge. In the shadow of your wings I will take refuge till the storm of destruction passes by. I cry out to God Most High, to God who fulfills his purpose for me. He will send from heaven and save me. He will put to shame him who tramples on me." Pause. "God will send out his steadfast love and his faithfulness. My soul is in the midst of lions. I lie down amid fiery beasts, the children of man whose teeth are spears and arrows, those whose tongues are sharp swords. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. They set a net before my steps. My soul was bowed down. They dug a pit in my way, but they have fallen into it themselves." Pause. "My heart is steadfast, O God. My heart is steadfast. I will sing and make melody. Awake, my glory. Awake, O harp and lyre. I will awake the dawn. I will give thanks to you, O Lord, among the peoples. I will sing praises to you among the nations, for your steadfast love is great to the heavens, your faithfulness to the clouds. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth." So I read this in preparation for today several times before it really hit me. That David is saying something that Jesus actually sums up in Matthew 6 when he's teaching his disciples how to pray. And he says, "Our Father who is in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread." That's the first half of Jesus' prayer where he's teaching his disciples to pray. And I think that Jesus he's not directly echoing, but it's the same message. Your kingdom come, your will be done. David is crying out to God and he's saying, "God, what's happening in my life right now, this season, is not of you. It's not good. It's very difficult. This is not the way it's supposed to be. And God, I need you to come and make it right. Please, God, bring heaven to earth. Make it right. Make it right." And so I was reading through this poem and I'm looking at David and what he's saying, and three things really stuck out to me that I want us to consider and also practice this morning. The first thing was that David was honest about his needs, and this is an emotional thing. David was honest about his needs, and this is kind of what I touched on back when I was telling the story from 1 Samuel. Sometimes I think, not always, but sometimes as believers, I know I struggle with this. I feel like, okay, Jesus has saved me by grace through faith. Jesus has done that, but now I'm on my own to make life work. Now I'm on my own to make life work. That's like the message that this world gives you. And sometimes I can fall into believing that. And so when difficult things happen, I start to make a plan in my mind. How am I going to make this work? It's all up to me. How am I going to make this work? But David displays to us an honesty to God. And he doesn't shy away from it, and he doesn't run from it, but he embraces it, and he says, God, this is my need. And he gets emotional with it. He says, this is my need. This is what I need, God. I'm sick of sleeping on the ground. I'm sick of running for my life and not even being able to fight back. I feel so powerless. God, I need. Verse 1 of Psalm 57. Be merciful to me, O God. Be merciful to me, for in you my soul takes refuge. In the shadow of your wings I will take refuge till the storms of destruction pass by. God, I need you now. And I need you to protect me because I can't even protect myself other than running. And I think that's huge for us in a year like 2020, where we feel like this is insane. We live in America, don't we? This is what happens away from us, not here. This is crazy. God, this isn't right. We need your protection right now until this storm blows over. And obviously we know that the goodness of God, if we zoom out from history, look at history a little bit farther out, we know this is no big deal to God. This is not a different problem that has never been dealt with before. This is, God knows what he's doing. God is in control. And that leads us to the second thing that I see David doing here, which is that David trusted that God was in control and that he was going to come through for him. This takes incredible humility. So David trusts that God is in control. And this is the very definition of humility. So verses 2 and 3, David says, I cry out to God Most High, to God who fulfills his purpose for me. I know God's going to come through. He fulfills his purpose for me. He will send from heaven and save me. He will put to shame him who tramples on me. Pause. God will send his steadfast love and his faithfulness. God will send from heaven and save me. God will send love. And he will send his faithfulness, and he will come into this moment. He'll come to me in the cave. He'll come to me out in the wilderness. He'll come to me as I'm running for my life. And he'll come in 2020. And he'll be there for you. And he'll fill you, number 3, with gratitude. David's heart posture of honesty and humility leads him to be both grateful and even joyful in the midst of extreme difficulty. Extreme difficulty. Verses 7 through 11. My heart is steadfast, O God, my heart is steadfast. I will sing and make melody. Awake, my glory. Awake, O harp, O lyre. I will awake the dawn. I will give thanks to you, O Lord, among the peoples. I will sing praises to you among the nations, for your steadfast love is great to the heavens. Your faithfulness to the clouds. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all of the earth. David sat with God and he was honest with him. And he had the humility not to take it on his own shoulders and to trust in God. And that produced in him a gratefulness where he couldn't sit down or hide it, but he had to tell people, he had to worship God because he's like, you're too good. You're too good. This is a terrible time, but you're too good because one, I know that you can handle me. You can handle my emotions. You can handle who I am. And I know that you will come through and you will take care of me. And because of that, you're good. You're too good, God. David displays in this psalm something I think we need in 2020. And that's honesty, humility, and gratefulness. So right now, what I'd like to do, the practice I talked about way at the beginning, is I'd like for each of us, for a few minutes, I'll set a timer for a few minutes, and I just want you, if you have a pen or a pencil, or maybe you just want to do it in your head as a prayer, but I want you to be honest with God about 2020. I'm going to be honest with you, God. I'm not going to hold anything back. I'm going to say whatever needs to be said about what I need, because I need this year. And then once you've been brutally honest with God, I want you to write down who God is and what he does. I want you to step back in humility and say, all of my plans, all of my attempts to make this better are on you, God, and I trust. Say that. I trust, Lord, in you. I trust that you will come through. And then I just want you to just take a moment and be grateful to God. God, what have you done for me? And what do I know you're going to do for me? Because of who you are. All right? Sound good? Thumbs up? Sweet. All right, I'll set a timer. Just go ahead and start writing or thinking or praying, however you want to do this. One of the best parts about youth ministry is that you get really comfortable with awkward pauses. So I like to incorporate that into most of my messages. So I hope that was enough time. That was about a little, maybe 4 minutes. And it feels a lot longer when you sit in quiet for that long, because not many of us do that. But I think honesty, humility, and gratitude are three things that are very important for us in this year and in every day. To be honest with God, to be humble and say, Lord, I trust you. And also to be grateful. Gratefulness is important. So is it all right if I pray? And yeah? So I'm going to pray and close us out. Take this tool. Take these three things with you, maybe just this week. In the morning, if you do a quiet time, or if you don't even, just jot down a couple things. What are some honest things I can tell God right now? How can I say that? How can I show him that I'm trusting him? Or how can I at least name it? God, I'm going to trust you. And finally, God, I'm grateful for these things. And just see how it changes you this week. Cool? Awesome. All right, let's pray. Again, Father, thank you. Thank you for this space. Thank you for your control over sickness, health, people, divisions, and unity, as well as politics and world leaders. God, you are in control. We can be honest with you. We can trust you, and we love you. Jesus, seriously, thank you. Holy Spirit, I thank you for coming, for filling each and every one of us, for opening our eyes and our ears. Lord, I thank you for this time. In your precious and powerful name, amen.